Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, June 20th, 2008. This is Doug Kelly here with Grant Rubidus. Hey, Grant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome and happy Friday night.
How's your day been, man?
Kind of busy. How about yours?
Oh, about the same, huh?
Yeah. You must have been playing with that Ouija board again, Doug, because you had that last-minute computer glitch, huh?
Yeah.
I warned you about that stuff.
I'm addicted, man. I can't stop. They still don't come, Grant. Okay. Hey, we're glad everybody could join us this evening. We've got a great guest with us tonight. We've got Annalisa Ventola with us from Public Parapsychology. We're going to get to that in just a minute. I just wanted to do a quick reminder on call-ins and all that. Your numbers are on the screen. You can call in live if you'd like. We'd love to hear from you. 347-945-7799. You can also get into the chat room and ask questions and interact with us in there. And here's just an FYI. Beginning in July, Paranexus Universe, the radio program, is going to move to Thursday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So bear in mind, I've got that all over the Paranexus website. Starting in July, it will move to Thursday night. We'll see if that might be a better night for more folks. So without any further ado, let's introduce Annalisa Ventola. She is a parapsychologist and musician living in Columbus, Ohio. She earned a BA in music with a minor in comparative religions at Ohio State University, where she also assisted in research projects at the Music Cognition Laboratory and Department of Linguistics. In 2001, Annalisa completed the summer study program in parapsychology at the Ryan Research Center, and since then has studied with several mentors in the field. She's an associate member of the Center for Research on Consciousness and Anomalous Psychology at Lund University in Sweden, and has recently been appointed the Executive Secretary of the Parapsychological Association and International Professional Organization of Scientists and Scholars Engaged in the Study of Psychic Experiences. Annalisa's research interests include haunting experiences, photographic anomalies, belief in the paranormal. She advocates the use of control sites in the investigation of haunting cases, and she is the founder of Public Parapsychology. Annalisa, welcome to the show.
Good evening.
Nice to have you. So you tell us about your start in this whole field. I mean, you've got some impressive stuff there and been able to do some impressive things, it sounds like.
Yes. I'm having a little bit of feedback right now.
That's common to begin with. Let's just hang tough and let's see if it doesn't resolve itself. For some reason, it's always you get the echo effect. So if it doesn't drive you crazy, then you can go ahead.
Okay, I'll get
it. Maybe you want to be driven crazy. I know Grant likes that.
Yeah, bear with us, Annalisa. Sometimes it's a little bit freaky at the beginning with Skype, so hang in there.
What the deal is that, you see, the Skype gods are not real sure about paranormal topics. So sometimes they kick in and, you know, they're just kind of biding their time, see if it goes a funky direction. So
Right. Don't
go funky, all right?
You know, I think it's getting better already.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much.
Anyhow, I got interested in this field about 10 years ago. And one of the first things I did actively was participate in the Ryan Research Center's summer study program. And that is, I don't know if the program's still going on, but it lasts about 2 months. And they used to do it every summer when they would fly in all these parapsychologists in from around the world to give guest lectures. They would have hands-on experiments and stuff like that. And so I found that just being like immersed in that sort of environment for 2 months and getting to meet all those people really opened a lot of doors for me. And so I got to meet some mentors and get introduced to all kinds of new research. And I came away from that summer with binders and binders and binders of research articles to follow up on, and then eventually started taking up my own research threads to follow on my own.
Sounds cool. So tell us about public parapsychology.
Public parapsychology is a website that I founded about 2 years ago. It's right now it's a weblog. I'm working on turning it more into a site. But I've been following blogs for a while. I wanted to start some kind of blog having to do with the field. And what I saw was a real need for there to be an interpretation of some of the research being done in the field and putting it into plain language so that it can be out there for the public.
That's good.
To be able to understand, be able to digest, and hopefully get excited about, too. So I started the organization. Well, it's not really an organization yet, but I started it with it's funny. I'm starting to get some people guest writing for me and book reviews, and we're looking at starting a referral service and some other exciting things coming up for public parapsychology. So I'm starting to think about it as an organization. I started with the purpose of providing that kind of service for the general public.
Well, you know, one of the things that one of the articles that you folks did, I think you've got a wonderful website, Annalisa, and I'm a great admirer of the website. I really like the articles that you present, and it, just in that manner. One of the ones that we used as a training exercise for our group was the one that on magnetic fields.
Oh yeah.
And that was a wonderful training tool for our folks. I mean, a lot of groups out there, amateur groups, don't utilize those techniques. And we encourage everybody to, you know, go to the site, take a look at it, and possibly use it as a training for their particular group. You know, it really helps in an investigation process.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's great. One of the nice things about that primer we put together, I mean, it was just a basic start. And actually, I owe a lot of that to Brian Williams, who did most of the writing for that primer. And one of the fabulous things about that is the list of references, because you'll find that there is a lot of research out there already about things like geomagnetic fields and electromagnetic fields and how those influence human psychology. And so the literature is already there, and so he did a really good job of bringing that all together.
Well, that was one of the things we stressed, too, when we did our training, Annalisa, was because a lot of times when we do this type of work, people say to us, well, you know what, what can you guys hang your hats on in terms of legitimate scientific research that's been done? And that reference guide that gentleman put in there was just wonderful, because you had Dr. Roll, you had several other eminent parapsychologists in the field that one could use as a reference and even cite if somebody said something, you know, in regards to, well, you're walking around with meters and what are you hoping to catch?
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite useful to us. It was really very well done.
We hope to have more articles up at the site like that in general, because, you know, there is a huge interest in this field and a lot of people who are taking up the research on their own. And I think that parapsychologists can be in a position to provide more information like that. And so we have a couple other things up our sleeve in that regard.
So do you have any particular area that I saw that you've got a wide range of interest. Is there any connection between your background in music and your interest in the anomalous phenomena?
You know, not particularly. I find it very interesting, though. There are a lot of parapsychologists that have music backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
A number of them. And also we've found that when it comes to psi research, In our experiments, people with musical backgrounds tend to perform better on psi tests than the general population. So there is, does seem to be some sort of link between musical ability and parapsychology, but we're still trying to tease that apart.
What do you think it has anything to do with right brain, dominant right brain?
I think that, well, when it comes to our, you know, musicians as experimental subjects, that they're used to performing. And when you think about it, when you enter into a laboratory and you're asked to do a psi task, you're asked to, you know, perform, sometimes under conditions that people can find stressful. And so my thinking is that musicians are already used to performing and already used to being creative in a position where there's pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's part of the reason why we see those kinds of results.
So what kind of studies have you done or cases have you been on that you've learned some things that you can share with our listening audience?
Well, I have one research project that was published a couple years ago where I did a quantitative investigation of a haunting location where we also investigated the next-door neighbor's house, which was had absolutely no reports of haunting activity in it. And that was a huge project. It took a lot of manpower, a lot of hours, a good bit of money. and so I put a couple years into that project. And now I'm working on another experiment that is a replication of a part of that study. It has to do with photographic anomalies and paranormal belief. And so, yeah, those two studies and public parapsychology has really been enough to keep me busy for the last.
Can imagine.
Years. Yeah, because that study that we did, it took a lot of planning. Methodologically, we had to lay out everything that we were going to do ahead of time, and then afterwards, we had a catalog of photographic prints that we needed the people to look at, and it took me about a year to recruit all the professional photographers that I needed to look at all those prints. So it's funny, I was actually looking over my study today, and it's only, I don't know, maybe 10 or 20 pages of work, but it was, you know, 2 or 3 years of my life.
So tell us about the investigation. What was the claim, the alleged activity? How did you guys approach it? What were you looking for? What was your mindset?
What happened is after I had finished up my studies at the Rhine Research Center, I had found a lot of research by a gentleman by the name of James Brown. He's he has a PhD now. He was affiliated with the Department of Psychiatry at Southern Illinois University, and he'd done quite a bit of research on hauntings where he had would take people through locations of a haunted or allegedly haunted house. And we find that in haunting cases that, you know, people report activities not in every single room of the site. It'll be like, oh, we've got this going on in the bedroom, this going on in the basement, this is going on in the dining room. And so they would set those three areas as experimental areas, but also keep the rest of the house open as a control. And so he was having people go through these houses, not knowing which areas had reports and which ones did not, and they would fill out questionnaires at the end. And he was able to see if experimentally blind participants, meaning that they didn't know which areas were what, if they would pick up on something on those areas. He did huge amounts of research in this area. And I came across an article of his where he was suggesting that instead of just doing this target and control area idea within one house, that perhaps researchers should start doing their investigative procedures over two different houses to try to match, if you have an alleged haunting, to try to match that location to another location where there is no history of hauntings. And this paper was actually just a methodological suggestion. It wasn't actually an experiment. So I contacted him, and I said, you know, this is a really good idea. Let's do it. At the time, there was some funding available through the Society for Scientific Exploration for young people, which I was at the time, not so much now, for young people who wanted to work with other people in that organization. He was a member of that organization. So together, he and I, and then another fellow student of mine at the Marine Research Center, we put together a proposal, and we were awarded, I think about $1,500 to make it happen.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you get to, when did you do the investigation again?
Oh, gosh, I think it was in around 2004, 2005. And then, like I said, it took a couple of years, so the paper didn't come out until 2007.
So you went to the location with two other people?
Yes, we had two other investigators. We had Dr. Horan, and then my research partner, Devin Terhune, who's actually a PhD student at Lund University in Sweden.
Okay.
And so it was the three of us. Now, what had happened was we did not want to know which house was which. So Dr. Horan had a colleague of his actually set up the whole thing for us. And so when we arrived at the two houses, we ourselves got to remain experimentally blind as to what we were doing as we were taking our measurements.
Interesting. So you didn't know which house it was that was the target. Okay. So what time of the day did you go? Did you go at night or in the daytime or evening? Or?
Broad daylight.
Okay. And
yeah.
How long did you spend?
I'm sorry?
How long did you spend?
Well, the study was supposed to last about 2 or 3 days.
Uh-huh.
It abruptly ended on day two. And actually, this is detailed in the paper on the second day. Well, actually, the first day, oh, let me back up. The first day, we went in and we did measurements. We got like four plans of the house. We took recordings of things like magnetic fields, temperature readings, number of vents. We recorded how many mirrors and reflective surfaces there were on all of the walls, pictures. We found that when there's a lot of pictures of people's faces, that sometimes that can provide a context that is a little bit spooky. So we took notes of all these things in both locations. And then we also hired a professional photographer, and we had him photograph, do a thorough survey of both houses with the help of a couple other photographers using color, black and white, infrared, Polaroid, and digital film formats. And we took a survey of both houses, and they're
still there. I think we might have lost Anna.
I'm back.
Yeah, you're back.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, but I think we
might. It's good to be back.
Yeah, but I think we lost Annalisa here. Take it off. Show's not streaming. Hi, everybody. We got dropped, and just in case we are back on, which it appears to be, says it's on but not streaming. Grant, you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still here, Doug. I'm having a little difficulty with Blog Talk Radio myself right now, just getting into the chat room.
Okay, I'm. If you guys in the chat room, if you can still hear us now, would you please let us know? Because I'm not sure we're connected, and it says we are, but it says the show's not streaming. So I need to know whether I need to call back in. If you can hear me, please let me know. I would appreciate that. Let's get Annalisa back on. If you can talk about something here, let's see, Annalisa. I'm not sure anybody can hear us or not. Let's get Annalisa back on.
Welcome to Talk Radio.
Annalisa? Okay, that wasn't her number. All right. That was Blog Talk Radio. I'm not sure anybody can hear us, but if you can, we sure appreciate you bearing with us. last couple of weeks, Grant, have been a real pain with the whole Skype thing. And I'm not even sure I've got... this is really odd. Grant, are you with me still? Hello, Grant, you with me? Hey, folks, if you can hear me, please... this is very odd. Okay. Wow. So you can hear me. Good. Appreciate that feedback, William. I'm not sure where Grant is.
I'm here, Doug.
Oh, you are there. I've been talking to you. I've been trying to get you. Grant, would you please talk about something paranormal while I get Annalisa back on?
Sure, sure. Can everybody hear us, Doug?
Yeah. Are you in the...
Oh, okay, great. Great. Well, you know, one of the things that's really nice about Annalisa's website, as we were starting to talk about, is it has a great wealth of information for folks who are interested in the parapsychology. Several of the articles there, and they do, you know, of course, have a library where you can go back, have been very, very interesting articles that have been done. Doing the research with one that I recall was kind of...
Hey,
Annalisa. We're back.
Yeah. Thanks, Grant. Annalisa, you, sorry about that. We all got dropped, so it took some doing to get back on. The last couple of weeks, I know that it's probably Grant not doing the burnt offerings like he should have to the Skype gods. I know that.
This is true, Doug. I'm afraid.
Yeah. All right. So, Annalisa, I apologize for that. Can you? So, you guys were on this investigation. You guys didn't know which house it was that was the target house. You went in, you took some readings. You did notice that in at least one of them, there was a number of pictures with people's faces on it. And
both locations had that. It was one of those things that we took notes of in every single room at both houses.
Okay, so pick it up from there then. So you go in and you do your readings and measurements. And
okay, did I get cut off before the photographs part?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So what we did was we took measures of what we call contextual variables, and that's things that I described, like temperature, magnetic field strength, number of vents in the room. Of course, if you have a vent in your room, that's more likely to have a draft. Number of windows, number of mirrors and reflective surface, all those are contextual variables. We also, though, did a complete photographic survey of both locations. We hired a professional photographer, and then myself and another research assistant also took some photographs. And we did this survey, again, in complete daylight, in a randomized fashion of every single room at both locations. And so we got all of that stuff done the very first day of our investigation. Now, the second day, we returned, and our plan was we had lined up all of these participants. Some of them who believed themselves to be psychically sensitive, some were skeptics, some were just new people in between. And their purposes were going to tour both houses, again, not knowing which one was which, and to record their impressions on basically a standardized questionnaire that we had about, you know, the various experiences that tend to happen in haunted locations and if you, you know, what did you experience in which rooms, et cetera. Well, what happened was I was actually in the house with the very first participant, and we were doing we were starting out with a very simple slide task. Can you still hear me?
Yep, you're doing good.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. We started out very simple slide task. We were using the Wiener cards, and we'd done it online. And I'm just sitting there with this woman, and one of the residents of the house came storming in, red face, screaming, "I don't care about no ghosts. This is my house." You know, just screaming in my face. And fortunately for us, Dr. Moran, he's a clinical psychologist, and he came in and he said, "Experiment over." We all went outside. He, you know, counseled the two of them, but at that point we had to pack it up and go. Everything we had planned had just.
So, was this the homeowner?
Yes, he's looking for the homeowners. He had an episode, though, and we saw that later when after Dr. Hood Rand had counseled this couple. He like completely dissociated during this. He does not remember storming through the house and yelling. And what we found out at that point was that, you know, a couple months before we come out to the location, that this was a relatively benign haunting, meaning that they hadn't really been experiencing much. But in the days leading up to the investigation, things started happening more and more. And while we were there, apparently, that they were experiencing some very troubling things. And, of course, we weren't allowed to know what was what, and so they couldn't really talk to us about it.
Did you find
it? So that was... It just kind of ended up in this, you know, huge outburst that effectively canceled the entire thing. But because we had a lot of data, that was my first day there. And so the paper that I sent to you guys and that I have on my CV is based on just the data that we had from that first day. And we got a lot of mileage out of that because we were able to take those photographs and set up an entire both psychological and parapsychological experiment using those photographs. In fact, I'm doing the second study right now with the very same catalog.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions about this. It was a man who, a male who did the outburst?
Yes.
And he dissociated. He doesn't remember anything, or didn't remember anything?
No.
Okay. No. First question, was there any sign of any kind of drug abuse or alcohol abuse or anything like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we found out later that he had been consuming alcohol.
Okay, well, there you have it. So that's if he hadn't and the outburst happened, that could have been an interesting part
right.
of it.
Right. That's true. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so what type of anomalous photographic results did you get, Annalisa?
Well, that's the funny thing. Is, you know, we looked at these photos at first, and, you know, we were there for the week, and then it was canceled, and we were still there. And so we, you know, waited for these photographs to come back, and we got them back, and it was so unexciting because we just flipped through and we were like, there's nothing here. And so I looked through them a second time, and then we started to notice little things like orbs, points of light, shadows, fogging, things that I call low-grade photographic anomalies. And, of course, I'm looking through these photos, and at this point, we both learned which house was which. I mean, it's kind of obvious after that episode.
So was the haunted house his?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But, you know, I noticed, though, that as I was looking through these photographs, I was more interested in looking a little more closely at the ones from the target site.
Yeah.
And that's when the basis for this experiment idea came to me.
All right. Cool. You still there?
I think we lost her.
I think we did, too. What is up with Skype these days? I mean, the last
few
weeks, it's taken a dive. This is very odd. Okay, so let me, hopefully we all won't get dropped. Let me get Annalisa back. Now,
hang in there, folks. We're going to get her back here in a second.
And one of the things that I want to ask her about is I want to ask her about what kind of pre-work was done. So let's get her back. Yes, we do have a professional radio station here.
Yeah, you look her.
Hello.
Hey, sorry about that again. It's just one of those nights, Annalisa. You must be.
I think
you must be on.
Something must have followed you back from that house, Annalisa. That's what we Doug and I. That's the only thing we can come up with.
Well,
for
you know,
all
it's
these
been a number of years since this case, so I think if I'd been followed, I'd
you know by now.
More problems.
Well, let me ask you this, Annalisa. As part of the pre-investigation work, did anybody, find out whether alcohol was an issue, or did they at least try to?
The thing is that it's for us to remain blind. We could not interact with the residents in the house.
But somebody must have set it up, right?
Yes, a colleague of the third author in our study, Dr. Herrera, a colleague of his had set it up. And I imagine that the residents had access to that, you know, that one phone number and whatever if they needed to contact her. But they were instructed not to speak to us.
I get it. So what after it was all was done and said, what did you take away as an investigator from that investigation? What did you learn?
Oh, so much. First of all, I'm not going to step foot into another haunted house without a clinical psychologist with me. Because, you know, one thing that we hadn't considered, and I've had a lot of time since then to think about, is that, you know, haunting experiences, whether it's a really something paranormal going on or not, is very frightening and upsetting to a person. And when you show up in their home with your equipment or whatever it is you're working on, that can be taken as threatening. And so I think you need to have a mental health professional. If not with you, then at least on call, so that if something like that happens, that
all right,
you can take care of that person's needs.
But well, let's explore that. Let's do this. We're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to explore a little bit more of that and possibly talk about some other of your investigations and things you've learned. So, folks, hang with us. I know it's been a little bit rough starting out. Hopefully, it'll be much better as we get into the rest of the program. So hang tough with us. I do want to mention that if you'd like to call in and ask Annalise any questions, we'd love to hear from you. The number's there on your screen, 347-945-7799. Also, you can ask questions in the chat room. We'd be happy to take those. And if you are not a member of Paranexus.org, please go take a look at Paranexus.org. We've got some interesting things going on there. We've got some great evidence that we're currently reviewing on the UFO case, interesting shadow pictures, some anomalous voice phenomena, et cetera. Plus, don't forget about the conference coming up in October. The Paranexus Conference, we've got some great speakers lined up, some great networking, some great education, and a lot of fun, too. So hang with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy, and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
sky. It's Paranexus Universe.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Doug Kelly, along with Grant Rubin Dunst, and our special guest.
Happy Friday night.
Yes, and our special guest, Annalisa Ventola. Welcome back, Annalisa.
Hi.
Hi. That's funny. All right. So we're talking about an investigation that Annalisa did a few years back. Some interesting things, and you'd taken some photographs, right, Annalisa?
That's right. Yes.
So talk.
I'm sorry?
Talk to us about that. Yeah, go ahead and pick up.
Oh, yes. Well, like I said before, we had hired a professional photographer who actually had no idea what the entire experiment was about. He was just told to point his camera in certain directions at certain times and snap the photos. And like I said before the break, too, I looked through those photos, and what I found was a lot of low-grade anomalies. And I knew that being biased already, knowing which house was which, I was paying more attention to those photographs that were taken at the allegedly haunted location. And so I had the idea, we should put these in a catalog, and we should have lots of photographers, people with experience looking at photographs, to look at these and see if they also notice anomalies in the photographs, and if they notice those anomalies more often at the target site. And so that's what we did. We did a second part to this study. I managed to recruit 8 professional photographers. Some of them have like 20 years of experience. Again, when they were presented with the photographs, they weren't told that there were 2 locations. They weren't told anything about the study. They were just asked to look at the photographs and to mark which ones that they believed had some sort of anomalous image in them. When that was done, again, this took like a year, we did a statistical analysis on everybody's responses, and we found that there were more low-grade anomalies found in the target site photographs to a statistically significant degree.
That's interesting.
Yes, it was huge. Because if you look at our paper, I mean, we were looking more at subjective haunting experiences and looking at what sorts of normal explanations can be found for things. But then the biggest result we got was something that we basically couldn't explain.
So what kind of anomalies did you get?
It was really low-grade stuff like orbs, points of light, shadows, fogging. And one of the photographs, there's a black object on the side that I still haven't been able to figure out what that is. Any of these photographs, you look at it, and it doesn't look like a ghost or anything like that. It's just a speck of light. But you give those photographs a context, and you set things up in a way that you can do your statistics on them. And then you find, oh, wow, you can look at the bigger picture and see that there were more of these kinds of photos found at the target location.
Interesting. So the low-grade stuff, I mean, were you able to explain that with just natural stuff like the orbs with dust and...
Well, you could, but we had the same personnel, the same equipment, the same day, 2 houses that were built in the same period of time. And again, people didn't know, the people taking pictures didn't know which was which. So, I mean, we should have had the same number of dust or orbs or artifacts at those locations.
You would think. Well, this one house was dustier than another one.
That's entirely possible. I noticed, though, that the target house is actually much cleaner than the control house. But one of the interesting things is both houses were built at the same period, so they, you know, had the same amount of deterioration, at least as far as houses go.
Okay, interesting. So, all in all, from that case, what are some of the things that you walked away? How did that case help you to be a better researcher?
This is a really great methodology we've laid out, but I think one of the problems is that everything became entirely too abstracted, and the episodes that Resonant had kind of brought that to the foreground, that, you know, not actually meeting the people whose houses you were going into. If I were to do it again, I don't think I'd want to be one of those experimentally blind investigators.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd want to be the person orchestrating civil deal and bringing in other investigators so that I can personally see to it that the residents' needs are being taken care of. Because, you know, what it really comes down to is doing these kinds of investigations are supposed to be a service to the people who are experiencing the phenomenon.
Right. And let's branch off with that a little bit. And I know that some of you in our listening audience have let me know about the sound. I'm working on tweaking it, and so if I need to tweak it some more, let me know. Let's talk about that, Annalisa, because I think you've hit on some important stuff there. There's obviously different methodologies and different approaches to take when doing an investigation. Now, when you guys did that, you were going in purely scientific, hence the blind aspect of it. The investigators really didn't know which one it was because you're trying to rule out investigator preconceptions, I'm sure, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, and I don't know that that's a wrong way to do it. I mean, you guys had a certain objective you were trying to reach, and I'm sure you did everything you could to arrange that so it would fly pretty smoothly. But then there's also the other direction to go on investigations, and that's where, for example, the spirit team, we go in with the idea of helping the client first and foremost, helping the spirit if that's the case, if there is one there, and then learning from the whole process. And you had mentioned that you would like to have a psychologist, if nothing else, at least on call for kind of a thing. And so a lot of groups, they may not have that luxury to have a psychologist as a member or on call. So I guess from my own experience, what I recommend is get to know your clients, do your homework, do your research, do your pre-investigation form, ask the questions, ask the tough questions about alcohol and drug abuse. Now, I will grant you that if they are using them, they're probably not going to tell you. But when you go in, look for signs. It's not black and white. For example, you said that the house that was affected was cleaner than the other house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was it pretty much in shape? Okay. So the condition of the home is not always a sign. Sometimes we've gone into a place and it's been honestly a bloody mess, cluttered, filthy.
Mm-hmm.
But what I look for are two extremes. Is it a filthy, cluttered mess? That could tell an investigator something. Is it too clean? Doesn't look lived in? That could also tell you something psychologically about the homeowner. So those are just a couple of things that I look for, and I like to find out about them because in parapsychology, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Annalisa, but from parapsychology, you're really looking for things that are caused by the human psyche, right?
Mm-hmm.
PK, RSPK, poltergeist types.
Okay.
So that's just my two cents.
Let me also add, though, that, we did have a woman who was taking care of the participants in our study, the participants being the residents of both the target and the control site. My regret was that I couldn't be that person in that role.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say that we had left those residents to nothing. I mean, they had contact. They had a person to deal with. It's just, wish it would have been me.
Yeah, I understand. And that way and I think there's something to be said for that, and that's something for the groups who are listening to also keep in mind. Somebody has to know what's going on, preferably the group founder, the group leader, somebody that's got some authority with the group so that they can keep abreast of the situation as it goes and pick it from there.
Certainly, in retrospect on that particular investigation, when you had that person that kind of flew off the handle, it was good to have that person there with that clinical background because we've had similar situations, nobody that's actually freaked out, but we've had folks that we've really strongly suspected some underlying psychopathology.
Right. One of the things
No, you're fine. You can't hear me?
Okay, good.
Some of the various, like, really easy explanations for haunting phenomena. That's all I wanted to
know. Sure. Do you, by chance, have? Are you? You're not listening to the program on a computer or anything, are you? For the echo.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. That's not it. All right. Well, it's just one of those things that happens with occasionally. So hang with us, folks, and I'm sure things will clear up here in a minute. So, what other things have you learned, Annalisa, from some of your research? What pulled you to this? Why are you involved in this?
Wow. That's a huge question. I think I have a lot of interest in this field, and, you know, hauntings is not a big area for parapsychology in general. Most of what you see happening in parapsychology has to do with experimental research on things like clairvoyance, telepathy, precognition, recall, all these terms, psi. One of the interesting things about hauntings, though, is I see a lot of different aspects of paranormal phenomena kind of coming together in one place, because with haunting research, you're dealing with all kinds of different factors. You're dealing with human subjective experience. You're dealing with physical factors, like, you know, geomagnetism. And in the study we did, we're dealing with both a field setting, and you can do experimental things within that field setting. And so I think that's why it holds so much fascination for me, is because there's just so much that can be done and so many factors that come together in that kind of phenomenon.
Cool. So you don't really, I mean, that's all interesting stuff, but keep going with it. What's really calling you to this field? What is it you want to know? This is your forum. Share with us. What's in your soul?
I really don't know. You know, I studied comparative religion at Ohio State University. And one of the things that we really focus on when we're talking about comparative studies and, like, anthropology and psychology and religion and all that stuff, one thing that comes to the foreground is the construction of knowledge and power and who's in charge and what things are taken as fact and what things are, you know, considered rational, what things are not. The dichotomy between science and religion, for example. And parapsychology is an example where it's a frontier science. It's one of these places where you see all of these factors sort of working themselves out. And so I've always been strongly attracted to things like that, like the construction of knowledge.
Okay. Well, here's a question from the chat room.
Okay.
Hunter Gather says, Annalisa has a background in religious studies. How does religion figure in? And he wants to know, I'm assuming, have you ever investigated hauntings in regard to houses where they have practiced voodoo?
No, I have not investigated a house where they're practicing voodoo.
Probably not that common in this country.
No. You know, when I was at the Comparative Religions Department at Ohio State, there was a fellow grad student actually did a lot of research on voodoo and was a practitioner himself, and some of the stuff that he got into was fascinating. But no, in an investigative sense, I haven't been involved in that. What was the first part of the question?
He wants to know, how does religion figure in?
How does religion factor in?
I'm
agnostic myself, and so when I approach my studies, it's not from an approach of belief or disbelief. It's, you know, I'm approaching from a place of non-belief. because I think that these kinds of questions that come up are, you know, questions that can be answered scientifically. And so, you know, religion doesn't really need to come
up with the question. Well, let's take it from a different angle. Why I'm hearing the echo too. How does religion figure in on the part of the client and hauntings? Do you have any thinking that way?
I don't have a lot of experience, actually, when it comes to that. Because, like I said, I've done a limited number of investigations, and I've usually been separated from the client.
What about Annalisa, the power of a client's belief in their psychic abilities, and has there ever been any correlation between the client's belief and the actual ability to, in any clinical settings that you know of, to verify that?
Well, you know, when it comes to research on psi abilities, it's been found time and time again that a prior belief in the phenomenon will make you more successful as a subject in a psi experiment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good enough. We're getting at the top of the hour, so we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll come right back. Hang with us. We're talking with Annalisa Ventola about parapsychology. Got some more to discuss. Hang with us.
Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy, and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
Is there a suppression of UFO and alien information by our government? Does the soul continue on after we die? Climb aboard the black ship of Paranormal Radio with your host, Captain Jack, on Contact Talk Radio and KRWM 106.9 FM HD3. Or visit WPRTRadio.com for more information.
the shadows. In the sky, it's Paranex's universe. Darkness follows.
And welcome back, everybody. This is Doug Kelly, along with Grant Rubendunst, and our guest, Annalisa Ventola. And we've got a caller on the line, so if you can hear us, we're going to take your call. And if you could give us your name and your question. Let me get you on. Hello, caller. This is Doug. What's your first name?
Hi, my name is Kendra.
Hi, Kendra. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Great. Do you have a question for Annalisa?
Anybody? Hi, Annalisa.
Oh, hi, Kendra.
It's a great show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Paying your friends to call in, is that right? I hope
no,
you paid
no,
you well.
This is totally random and completely.
Where are you calling from, Kendra?
I'm calling from California.
Oh.
And I haven't been able to listen to the whole show, so I apologize if you've already talked about this question.
But with all
of the questions around religion that you've been talking about, Annalisa, I wanted to ask if you have ever, given your agnostic outlook on religion, have you ever come across an experience or a story in your research that caused you to kind of change your worldview or challenged your existing worldview, whether or not that had to do with religion, psychology, science, or whatever, or has everything that you've encountered pretty much been what you expected?
Oh, that's a great question. I was raised Catholic, and around the age of 18 or 19, I rejected Catholicism for that explanation is a very, very long one, but went into the total opposite direction of just becoming a total atheist and materialist. And when I first became interested in parapsychology, I was reading Randy and Joe Nickel and Susan Blackmore.
Ooh.
And fascinated by everything, but thinking that it was all bunk.
Right.
And so the transformation for me was turning from an atheist into an agnostic, like being able to acknowledge that maybe the scientific materialist worldview isn't necessarily the right one. Part of that was acknowledging my own paranormal and psychic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And part of that was just speaking to lots and lots of totally sane people, incredible people who had some amazing stories of things to tell me. And so it's like the more involved I became in the field, the more I read the evidence, the more I came to be able to admit to myself and to others that no, the scientific worldview doesn't have it entirely worked out. There is still some mystery.
Amen, sister. Preach it.
That's great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Kendra.
Thanks for calling in, Kendra.
Okay. Thanks for the show.
You bet.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hey.
Bye-bye.
Good night. I think we might have touched on a nerve here, huh? What do you think, Annalisa?
Perhaps.
Yeah. Hey, this is Paranexus Universe. Now, let me see if I can get you going a little bit here. I think that religion and mainstream science are two sides of the same coin from the standpoint that they both have preconceived notions going into the paranormal. That's why I am also agnostic. That's why I'm neither atheist nor religionist. I used to be a religion. I was Jehovah's Witness for 40 years. I left that 10 years ago, probably for very similar reasons as you. And so,
yeah.
So now we get into this whole belief system, like Grant had mentioned earlier. The whole belief system on the part of clients, on the part of, on the part of clients regarding paranormal activity, how does that factor in? I mean, think about that. You obviously have some very deep-rooted feelings when it comes to religion. Am I correct?
I definitely have a deep history.
That's right. I mean, tell me, am I right or am I right? It's one of those two choices.
You're right.
Okay, of course I'm right. I'm always right except for when I'm wrong. Don't ever forget that. Okay, so you have taken more of an agnostic approach, which is, in my opinion, very good, because who knows what the hell's going on, right?
Right.
So, I'm gonna get through that call. So, anyway, we got the echo back now. Anyway, so what role does that play in people's worldview regarding the paranormal? How does religion affect it? How does atheism affect it? What's the pros, the cons, if any, of either side or both sides?
Well, I think that when it comes to like witnessing a paranormal event, you see this happen sometimes. You can have, let me give you a hypothetical example here. You'll have five people in a room, a ghost will come in, one person will see it, one person won't. One person might have a scent. One might just feel a sense of presence. One might just sit there and have a conversation with it. And we're finding that, I find, at least in my studies, that how those different people approach the experience really does have to do with their worldview. Atheists don't see ghosts. And so I think when you have to look at these things, a lot of it does have to do with people's beliefs and their subjective experiences. It doesn't mean that there is absolutely no objective reality to what's going on, but I actually question if there is such a thing as objective reality sometimes, because of because everything we experience in the world is filtered through our minds, our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And what we believe about ourselves and the rest of the world.
Interesting. Okay, so what could mainstream science do differently with regard to paranormal research?
When it comes to paranormal research, it isn't really part of mainstream science. I mean, what they could do differently is pick up a journal of parapsychology sometime.
Yeah.
To the articles and approach the literature with an open mind instead of having their minds already made up that there is no paranormal, that looking at paranormal experiences is taboo, that it's a big no-no in science. I mean, I would say that anything that's amenable to human experience is also amenable to scientific inquiry. But unfortunately, there's a lot of taboos that just don't allow people to look at these questions.
Well, a lot of them are considered with tenure, and whether they'll be looked at as quacks, by their community. So, all right, cool. So, Grant, you were talking about something during the break that you wanted to address with Annalisa. Do you remember that? I know he's there. Hey, Grant, you with us? Okay, well, let's talk.
Hey, Doug. I'm here. I'm here. I'm sorry. I was just listening. I was enthralled listening to you both talk. Annalisa, I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your affiliation with some of the anomalous research folks that you're affiliated with from Europe, and maybe talk about some of the frontiers you see for parapsychology.
Okay. Well, I'm an associate member of the Center for Research on Consciousness and Anomalous Psychology, which is at Lund University, Sweden. And actually what happened there was the head of that lab, Dr. Ethel Cardenia, found my public parapsychology blog, was very interested in what I was doing and wanted to provide some support. And so I like to keep an eye on what's going on at that lab. And in the near future, I might end up actually being the webmaster for that laboratory. So, what we're doing at that, and we call it Zercats for short. And very exciting things are going on at that laboratory. They really have a PhD in parapsychology that they're advertising. And the thing about Lund University is that if you do PhD studies there, your tuition is covered. So actually, there's an opening right now for somebody if you have a psychology background and you want to study psi experiences. There's a place there for you to do it. What they're interested in right, what they're doing a lot of at that lab right now is studies on hypnosis. I remember, Doug, you're a certified therapist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you're probably familiar with the idea that, you know, some people are more hypnotizable than others.
Yeah.
And so they found that previous studies have found that people who are highly hypnotizable tend to have more mystical and anomalous experiences and also tend to perform better at psi tasks. So at that laboratory, what they're doing right now is they're trying to create sort of a portrait of what is going on in the brain during states of consciousness, and also phenomenology of these low and high hypnotizables. And then they're also doing projects looking at this positive association between being highly hypnotizable and the performance in these psi tests. And looking into the future of maybe having a long-term training program to potentially enhance the performance in these psi experiments from high hypnotizables. They just supervised a bachelor's thesis on precognition and hypnotic suggestibility. And this autumn, they're planning another study to commence on the spontaneous reporting of anomalous experiences in daily life among highly suggestible individuals. And the study is going to use personal digital assistants to track participants and record their reports of their experiences from day to day.
Wow, that sounds like a fascinating study.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's take some questions from the chat room. Down here a little bit. And the first one that we haven't asked yet. Mike Jones wants to know, have you ever worked any cases or done any research involving RSPK or poltergeist events? And the rest of it is, once the client was informed, did it dissipate?
I have not had the pleasure of being called in an RSPK case. I'm waiting for that phone call because that sounds like more exciting than I could probably handle. But no, I haven't done a case like that yet.
Well, I know when we've done them that it does seem to help it a little bit. A lot of times when you address an issue and when you can show or at least raise it as a possibility, it tends to help. It doesn't always eliminate it. It just depends on who the agent is. Let's
right.
go to have you done any research regarding malevolent inhuman spirits? And do you have any thoughts on the difference between a malevolent inhuman spirit and a demon, if any?
No, I don't have any experience in that area.
Okay. There's another question here from Venus. Venus Stunt Double? Cool name. can you imagine an experience in your research that would ever cause you to quit the field? Something that would prove across the board that paranormal things do not exist, or something that would make your type of research obsolete. Can you, anything?
Wow, I can't think of any just for me.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
if anything, that would probably prompt me to.
Thank you, Lisa.
It's discouraging when you read too many studies that do not come out with positive results. I think sometimes the laboratory environment kind of inhibits psi.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do get discouraged sometimes when I read articles where, again and again, people are doing the same things and not getting results. But on the other hand, it makes me think that maybe it's time to change your methodology or to try a different avenue. I think that there are some aspects of parapsychological research that are dead horses, so to speak,
yeah.
and it's time to stop beating them.
But
I think I'm always going to be a part of this field because there are so many different avenues to explore.
Here's another question from hunter-gatherer. Why is it that the presence of children, especially young women, seem to cause more paranormal happenings in a house? I assume that he's referring to RSPK.
Yeah, it's in the literature. It shows that generally, like pubescent teenagers and women seem to be like most often the RSPK agents in poltergeist research. I don't have a ready answer for why that is, but it's definitely something that we do keep finding again and again and again.
It's usually associated with turmoil and
stress.
Right.
And
a lot of
factors. And if you think about it, too, that these things happen in the home, and so you got to look at, too, who's spending most of their time in the home. You're finding that it's often, you know, people who are spending a lot of time in the same location, whether they're housewives or children that, you know, obviously don't have cars and don't get to leave and go out about. So, yeah, I have not seen many RSG cases or heard of any of, you know, working men in the field. So
I'm not sure we've come across, at least I don't think we've come across the male. Have we, Grant?
No, I don't think we've ever. We suspected in one case that we had in Port Charlotte area down here in Florida that was might have been a PK case, and it turned out that nothing could have been farther from the truth.
Well,
initially it had some of the ingredients. We thought that we may have an agent, if you recall, Doug.
Yeah. I think that PK was part of it, not a big part. I don't think there was a whole lot going on. But we've had other cases where I'm pretty sure that PK was playing a role. And that's the interesting thing about paranormal research, is that sometimes there can be a mixture or a blend of causes once you've done your research. Have you found that to be true, Annalisa?
Oh, yeah. There's all sorts of factors that you can look at. I mean, there's, you know, people's beliefs, there's their personality characteristics. There's the, you know, physical characteristics going on in the home. You know, you take somebody who is already in an emotionally stressful situation. You guys had William Roll on your show, I believe, a few years ago.
Yep.
And I read his book Unleashed, which was about his case with Tina Raish, which actually happened here
right.
In Columbus where I live. And, you know, if you look at his chapter on the theory of what's going on. It's like there's a variety of factors that just sort of all came together into one place, and boom. She was, you know, a foster child in a strange situation. I seem to remember that she had some sort of brainstem issue going on. And so, you know, you take the environment, you take the human being at the center of that environment, and sometimes those two things just unite a certain way.
Okay, well, we finally have a identity for hunter-gatherer, Sharon from Ohio, friend of your mom's.
Right?
Yeah, she said something like, eat crap and die. No, that's not true. That's just not true at all. She wants to know, has your group studied things like Kirlian photography or of auras?
I don't really
have a group.
Okay. And Mike Jones, he asked a question earlier. This is a little bit of a different... you've done research on remote viewing?
No.
Oh, okay.
Red box description.
Okay, the question is, did it suggest that time was not a constant during the session, during the remote viewing session, I assume?
I think that by phenomenon in general, there really is something anomalous going on. It suggests that, that time and space are probably not... There's probably a better way of saying that, because these things are more fluid than what we think in our materialist paradigm.
Well, you know, Annalisa, when you talked about Dr. William Roll, one of the things that was so interesting when he was on our show was he objected to the word paranormal, And of course, his objection was that he felt there could be a natural explanation or that would fit in the natural world. And one of the things that struck me about that was if somebody has a preconceived notion or an inclination towards one particular, say, religious belief, their interpretation of a natural phenomenon within themselves or that fallacy they cause PK might be still interpreted as we might have done so 100 years ago.
One of the things that's outside of the normal experiences, then they do become normal because they become explained. It's like parapsychology or the paranormal based fields that are eventually going to lose topics as time goes on.
Right.
Well, it would be really fascinating if
still there, Grant?
I lost him too.
Yeah, I think we lost him. I'll try to get him back on if he shows him still on. He'll probably drop off. But that's the whole thing about paranormal, and I think that's one of the things that tend to separate paranormal investigators from parapsychologists. I think it's semantics a lot, because. Mm-hmm. You know, you take a paranormal researcher, you take a parapsychologist, you take a ufologist, a cryptozoologist, you take a scientist of any discipline you want to choose, and what are we all looking for? We're all looking for answers to the human condition. We're all trying to discover more about ourselves and our place in the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to parapsychology and paranormal investigators, I know there's some differences in the approach, but yet we're all seeking the same answers. And
I've been thinking about those differences a lot lately. I was listening to your show about a week ago, and I can't remember the name of the research that you guys are talking about, the state of the field of paranormal research. And there was some discussion going on about the differences between parapsychologists and paranormal researchers. And I think you nailed it when you said. When you said what you said, I think it comes down to difference in vocabulary,
mm-hmm.
because you know parapsychologists have their own vocabulary for what's going on. I think another major thing that separates the two, though, is the use of statistics. Like when we were talking about my experiment that I did before, I had to set things up, well, myself and the investigators I was working with, we had to set things up in such a way that we would be able to do statistical tests and that we would be able to find facts based on those statistics. And so that's, you know, I think those are the two major differences in the approach to use of statistics and the vocabulary.
Yeah, that could be. And let me ask you this. What's your position on spirits? Do you believe they exist?
No, I don't believe in them. But I don't think that it's, when it comes to what I do, it's not about belief. It's about, you know, what can be scientifically demonstrated. And I have not seen yet a demonstration of the existence of spirits.
Okay, so what do you think is accountable for the plethora of reports and some documented phenomena?
Well, there's a variety of explanations, and I'm sure that you're familiar with some of these. It could be a spirit, for example, a discarnate entity of some sort of some human that was alive at one point and is now dead. There's the theory that it could just be like an echo. I think you guys call that the stone tape theory, where it's an echo a highly charged emotional event that happened in the past. And no, there's not a physical spirit there, but rather you're paranormally witnessing the past event. And then there's also the super sight hypothesis, where a person has a ability, like a telepathic or clairvoyant ability, that somehow manifests itself as something that looks like a spirit, but really it's just your subjective, albeit it's still paranormal, but your subjective experience of a past event.
Okay, and obviously.
And then there's the naturalistic explanations where it's magnetic waves and hallucinations and,
and all that good stuff. Okay, so that's one of the things that I'm beginning to find that differentiates paranormal researchers from quote unquote, you know, parapsychologists. I'm using those terms to just, I'm talking about the many myriad of groups out there who are going about it, not from a parapsychological point of view, but just from the TAPS, you know, type of view.
Right.
And so one of the things I'm finding, especially now with you and Dr. Roll, don't believe in spirits. I don't mean any disrespect here, but one of the things that really I'm trying to wrap my brain around is, how do you know? You know what I mean? Rather than take a position, how do you know?
Right. Well, remember, I'm agnostic, and I'm taking a position of non-belief. I don't disbelieve in spirits. I don't have a belief that they absolutely don't exist.
Oh, okay. Good. I must have misunderstood. I apologize.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're open-minded.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. So you're trying to find out which conclusion it is.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So I think I misunderstood on that one. All right, well, folks, good discussion going on here. We're at the bottom of the hour. We got about another half hour or so to go. So if you will hang with us, we are going to be back in just a few minutes, and we'll continue talking with Annalisa. Hang with us.
The West Georgia Paranormal Research Society is composed of individuals with a common goal, the scientific investigation of the paranormal. It is our hope that these investigations will allow those of us in the paranormal community to bring about answers that will benefit us, as well as helping to educate the general public. We approach all investigations and questions with the utmost professionalism and confidentiality required for the situation. If you are experiencing strange occurrences around your home or place of business, such as unexplained noises, smells, or visual phenomenon, these could be possible signs of paranormal activity. If you're interested in finding some answers to these questions, or if you'd like to have our team investigate the activity, visit us at www.wgprs.com for more information. Research, assistance, understanding. We're here to help you.
It's Paranexus Universe. Darkness follows.
Welcome back, everybody. Doug Kelly here with Annalisa Ventola. Welcome back, Annalisa.
Good to be back.
And we've been having an interesting discussion, some differences between parapsychology and paranormal research, but yet really after the same thing. Now, you had something you wanted to talk about, the memberships and so forth. You want to take it off the chat?
Yes, the Parapsychological Association has recently re-categorized their membership levels. One of the things they did, first of all, is they reduced the fees for student affiliates to $25 a year to encourage more people who are enrolled in a college or university and have an interest in psychic experiences to give them an opportunity to join the organization. Also, the affiliate membership category, it used to be that to be an affiliate of the PA, you had to be a member of another scientific organization, whether you're a member of the American Psychological Association or, you know, something in physics. Or now they've totally done away with that requirement, essentially making it possible for anybody with a serious interest in parapsychology to become an affiliate. The benefits of membership are that they now have a members-only site with forums. There's also a newsletter, which is very informative. You can get discounts on the Journal of Parapsychology, and you can also get a discount to, I think the name of the organization is lexicon.org. It's a online library of all of the publications in parapsychology, like the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research, the Journal of the Society for Scientific Exploration, Journal of Parapsychology, European Journal of Parapsychology, like all those different journals also have electronic editions available in there. And those discounts are pretty substantial. So membership definitely has its rewards, and also becoming a member will also help the to support the organization, to support the research.
And this is the, which organization is it, the American?
This is the Parapsychological Association.
Okay. The website address is on Paranexus.
Parapsych.org.
Good. And so if you're an enthusiast in parapsychology, you can now join them. Is that correct?
That's right. You can join as an affiliate member.
Cool.
Hey, Doug, can you guys hear me now?
Yep.
Yep.
I'm back, I guess, temporarily. You know, one of the things I really like about your website, Annalisa, is the fact that, that you you offer folks the opportunity to participate in ongoing research, and you know, just by clicking a link, a person can actually be a participant in research that's out there to contribute to the whole field. I think that's really a great idea. Have you had a pretty good response to that?
Oh, yeah. The mission of public parapsychology is to help visitors to explore, support, and participate in parapsychological research. And if you go to my site and you look on the right-hand bar, there's sections for each of those terms. Explore has links to all of the different research organizations. There's a bookstore. And links to various information. Support, there's links to where you can donate to various organizations if you want to support the research. And then under participate, I think that's the section you were talking about, there's a huge, huge list of links of ongoing online experiments. And also, I would say at least once a month, you get an email from a researcher at different universities, a lot of them in Europe, but some also here with online experiments, just looking for people to participate in their research. So there's lots of opportunities at the site to explore, support, or participate.
Annalisa, do you think that the approach...
there he is. Say it again, Grant. You blanked.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it's a bad night for Skype and all of us tonight. What I was asking, if you can hear me, is is there a distinct difference between the way that the European scientific community approaches paranormal research as opposed to the American community?
Not that I've noticed. There is a lot more support for parapsychology within academia in Europe. In the U.S., the majority of research centers are private laboratories rather than academic laboratories. And so you might notice some subtle differences in the research because of how it is supported.
It's like a more open-minded in Europe? More accepted.
I think that's some of it. Also, you know, I don't know, I think it was about 20, 25 years ago, a professor by the name of Robert Morris took up a chair at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. And what he required of his PhD students was that when you do your PhD thesis, that two-thirds of your thesis has to be on a psychological subject, and then the other third could be parapsychological. And this is a very genius idea, because what he was making sure of is that all of his students would be employable at universities by having a little bit of mainstream science and a little bit of parapsychology going on at the same time. And it works, because what you see now is a lot of his students are being employed by various psychology departments within the UK. And yes, I think they are a little bit more open-minded there, so they're able to do both facets of their research at the same time. And so that is helping to build the parapsychological community within Europe.
Now, here's a question from Res Miranda in the chat room. Are you familiar with M theory? If so, what's your opinion on the possibility of parallel universes, string theories, etc.?
I'm afraid I'm not as familiar with physical theories of psi as I'd like to be, so I couldn't really say much on that topic.
Do you think that, basically the thought here as she expands is that there are strings of time, and there are times when each string collides at random, and in those strings we exist and other beings exist in other parallel universes, and they basically overlap.
Yeah, there are some fantastic ideas in physics right now, quantum physics and things like string theory, that definitely could have some application to what parapsychologists do. Unfortunately, my own research has been more on the side of psychology than physics, so I really don't have anything intelligent to say about it.
Well, cool. Well, that's an honest answer. All right.
Oh, yeah. That's what we'll get.
So where do you see yourself in 3 years or 5 years as a parapsychologist?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, recently I was appointed the executive secretary of the Parapsychological Association. And so I'm really hoping, I'm taking up the reins of a woman who's done a fantastic job, and I'm hoping that I can continue to help build and improve the organization. So that will be more of a focus for me probably over the next 3 years. One of the nice things about this job is that my attendance and participation at PA conferences is going to be guaranteed. So I should have a lot of opportunities to network, and I'm hoping that I can really encourage my fellow colleagues to do more public scholarship, and by that I mean to take it upon themselves to interpret what they're doing to the general public, so that we'll see more cooperation between various disciplines.
That's good. Good goal.
Yeah.
What would you recommend somebody who was interested in parapsychology? How would they go about learning more about it, getting into that field? What would they have to do?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is, if you're a student, is to become a student affiliate of the organization, because it is full of mentors who are willing to help. The second thing is you want to make sure that you get involved in the mainstream science first. You want to look at something like either psychology, anthropology, or physics, and to become really grounded with the basics in that discipline. just basic statistics, methodology, all that, you know, to focus on first being a scientist and then looking at parapsychological topics.
Okay, and if somebody is, say, you know, out of, I mean, they're older than that, they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever, and really don't have an option to go back to college or don't have a scientific background but yet want to learn more about it, any suggestions there?
Well, that's kind of the position that I'm in because, you know, if you look at my biography, I have a BA in music. Comparative religions has helped a little bit in providing a background for what I do, but not really. what I did to get as far as I did was I read a lot. I would pick up those journals of parapsychology, and sometimes I'd have to read the same sentence three or four times, you know, with a dictionary. But I plowed through and took, you know, a basic statistics course, read books on statistics, or emailed people whose research I admired and asked questions. And I think you'll find that this is a very open-minded group of scientists and scholars. And if you are doing quality research, and then they're going to pay attention to what it is you're doing, and that, you know, that you will become a participant in the field as well.
Okay.
And, of course, there's their website, which is a wonderful resource for somebody who may not want to go the academic route, because you have all the papers there, you have the research, the most current research, so that's a valuable resource for anybody who's really interested in keeping up to date with what's going on in the parapsychological community.
Yep, that's what I aim to do.
Well, good deal. Well, we've had an opportunity to talk about quite a few things tonight. Interesting to talk to parapsychologists, and we had, as you mentioned earlier, we had Dr. Roll on here a couple months ago and asked him about, do you believe in spirits? No. And I think he might have had a similar approach as you when you're open-minded to it, but yet you have nothing conclusive to sink your teeth into. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so that's why you're looking. I mean, and, you know, you look at the whole universe, you look at what we're engaging in now, you know, string theory, quantum mechanics and physics and all of that stuff, you know, I think that's going to bear on it. Like you had said earlier, too, I think that's going to have a big, I think we're getting closer to being able to scientifically understand an interdimensional type of an issue. Where do you stand on ETs, by the way? Or do you do much with
it?
Right.
You know, when I first started looking at paranormal I had quite an interest in ufology. And when it comes to ETs, I don't have an opinion necessarily about the state of that field, but I think, you know, it's a huge universe, and it would be hubris to believe that we're the only sentient beings in such an expansive space.
Yeah. No doubt about that.
You think there's any connection between paranormal phenomena such as spirits and hauntings and extraterrestrial activity? Have you ever given that any thought?
There's a phenomenon, we could take it as a general term, of entity encounter experiences that people like to study. And an entity encounter experience can be anything. It can be a ghost, an angel, an ET.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a whole bunch of research just in that general area that doesn't really make any claims as to what that entity is, but to look at the experience of witnessing some other sentient being that you can't, it's either outside of yourself or not human.
Cool. Well, for our listeners, just want to remind you, go take a look at Annalisa's website. It's
Public parapsychology.
I can't read. Okay, give me a break. You don't have to get mad at me. All right, publicparapsychology.org is one, and you also want to take a look at parapsych.org. Both of those are on Paranexus on Annalisa's webpage that we've got for the guest on paranexusradio.org if you want to go right there. Plus, you've got the Center for Research. Well, you're part of the Center for Research on Consciousness and Anomalous Psychology. That's a little bit more of a drawn-out URL, so I'll let you guys go to the website to look at that.
Right. And that website seems to be down at the moment, but I just talked to the folks over there. They said that the psychology pages are down right now, but keep checking back, and you should be able to find that site.
Okay, cool. And take a look at Parapsych, because if they're now allowing basically enthusiasts to join, that might be something that you want to do out there and learn some more. I mean, it's good to be open to a lot of different aspects of this entire field. So take a look at that. And if you're not a member of Paranexus, we'd love to have you as a member. Right now we have charter memberships for $5 for 6 months. Paranexus is a professional association of parapsychologists, paranormal researchers, ufologists, cryptozoologists, and enthusiasts, people who want to know more. We've got some interesting evidence in there that we're currently analyzing, some shadow pictures taken in the daytime, and there's a lot of discussion about that in there as well. We've even got some anomalous voice phenomena in there that we're currently researching and analyzing to determine authenticity. Interesting stuff from my investigation. Well, Yari Nicola, my partner in crime on Paranexus, he and I did the investigation at Stan Romanek's house a couple of weeks ago. Got some interesting stuff. So some cool things to look at. And don't forget about the conference in October in Tampa. We'd love to have you there. The prices are right. In fact, we were able to negotiate some lower rates. It's $139 for the entire conference. That doesn't include the hotel, but the hotel, I think, is $92 a night. It's a nice hotel as well. And we'd love to see you there. We've got some great topics. It'll be an opportunity for networking with other paranormal investigators. And it will be an opportunity to have some fun, too, at the same time. And our hope is that everybody who attends will walk out of there with their, with knowledge and their minds expanded and skills enhanced. And so it's not only a time to learn, but it's a time to share as well, because that's what this whole thing's about, is learning more about the human condition. So hope to see you there as well. Next week, who do we have on next week? I think that's to be announced right now. We're working on that guest, if I'm not mistaken, Grant.
It's Mr. Sabal.
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah. How could I forget that?
Yeah, John Sabal, who's pretty well versed in anthropology and has done a lot of research, a lot of battlefield research. So we're looking forward to having him on the show as well.
Yeah, and he's the topic of that one is the ghost excavator, so it's kind of a takeoff on anthropology, and he's a cultural anthropologist akin to psychology. Interesting guy and interesting stuff, and he's going to be talking about how to do investigations without taking a whole bunch of equipment and yet getting more results. So we'll be interested to see what he's got to say on that. And again, don't forget that beginning in July, this program will air on Thursday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Try to get a little bit of a better night when perhaps not so many people are out and about. So anyway, we hope you'll join us then. Grant, you're going to be out and about yourself next week, right, in the following week, I believe.
Yep, I won't be here. I think we'll have one other.
He's going, like, on a safari to Bermuda. Okay, not really a safari to Bermuda, but I think we lost Grant. Anyway, but Grant won't be with us, but we're going to have a guest host yet to be determined. And if we don't get a guest host, you'll still get Doug. And where could you go wrong with that? Come on. All right, folks, listen, thanks so much for listening. Annalisa, thanks so much for spending your time with us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and if you'll hang with me for just a minute. And, folks, we hope to see you next week. Hope everybody has a great week, and good night.
night, in the shadows, in the sky, it's Paranexus Universe.